Good afternoon, Justice Levinas.
Good afternoon.
Today is July 14th, 2021. Before us is the matter SJ 2021-129, Graham and others, first district attorney for Camden County. Representing the petitioner are attorneys Matthew Siegel of the ACLU of Massachusetts and Rebecca Jacobstein of CPCS. Representing the respondent is attorney Elizabeth Mulvey and attorney Thomas Duke.
Good afternoon. Thank you for coming in on an afternoon. I specifically asked for you to come in because I wanted to just, before I actually deal with the merits, ask you a few questions about the relief being sought and some of the status of what seems to be various investigations. So, Attorney Siegel, if I could ask you the following question. You have asked, you know, filed under Chapter 211, Section 3, and I'm wondering why is the petitioner's position that that is the appropriate vehicle for the relief being sought? That is, why not appeal from an individual criminal defendant discovery order in due course? Why is this extraordinary level of relief required?
Good afternoon, Your Honor, and that's certainly a fair question. Let me back up, and I think to explain why we think we've come to you with the right vehicle and the right petitioners, just to be clear about what it is we think this case is. The case is premised on what we think are unusual and perhaps unprecedented circumstances in Camden County, where the Springfield Police Department is, as far as we can tell, the only police department in America since 2017 to confront an adverse pattern of practice report from the Department of Justice. And the record that has been established in this case, to which our relief is tailored, and this is where I think the answer to your question is going to come, is that two things haven't happened since then and which this petition seeks to change and make happen. One of the things that hasn't happened is that no one on behalf of the Commonwealth has come forward to say that they are going to undertake an investigation of the misconduct flagged by the Department of Justice. And the second thing that hasn't happened is that in the more than a year since the report is issued, the District Attorney's Office in Hampden County has not received and therefore has not begun to disclose any of the documents underlying the report, despite recognizing since at least July 2020.
Wait, say that again. The DA's office has not received nor disclosed information since?
They have not received the documents underlying the DOJ report. So the DOJ report relies on documents that the Department of Justice received from Springfield, from the Springfield Police Department. At least that's what's been represented to the DA's office. According to the affidavit that was submitted in the DA's record appendix in this matter, by July 2020, which is the same month as the DOJ report was issued, the Hampden DA's office the Department of Justice and said, may we please have the documents underlying this report, because we recognize that we must review them in order to satisfy our Brady obligations. They don't have them. They don't have the documents because...
So let's be precise. Who are you speaking of when you say they?
The District Attorney's Office does not have these documents. But they are within the
process. But they're asking for them.
Only from... They've asked for them from the Department of Justice. They have exchanged correspondence with the Springfield Police Department, which is a member of the prosecution teams for these matters.
Right.
So they're within. So when I say they don't have them, I mean physically within the office. As a legal matter, they do have them. As a legal matter, these are all documents possessed by prosecution teams under the DA's supervision and since July 2020 at the very least.
But let's just pause there because that's one of the questions I had. So there's correspondence between the DA's office and the Springfield Police Department trying to obtain the underlying information. There's correspondence between the DA's office and DOJ to obtain the underlying information. And then, as I understand it, there's a lawsuit filed in federal court also to obtain the information.
Right.
So that sounds like at least the beginnings of an investigation, and I'm wondering why declaring
right.
that an investigation duty has been triggered is something that you're seeking.
That, let me just say that I said there were two things that haven't happened. One was the investigation that hasn't happened, and the second is the disclosure. I'm just talking about the disclosure right now. Asking for documents that are already within the possession, custody, and control of the prosecution teams is required by Brady. It was required by Brady and Rule 14 and so forth and the Rules of Ethics as of at least July 2020. But it's not an investigation. There's nobody who has said in this case that the Commonwealth is investigating the full scope and gravity of the misconduct flagged by the Department of Justice. Nobody. The opposition submitted by the district attorney says it shouldn't be us. It does not say it shouldn't be us and here's who's doing it. So that is the situation that confronted the court in Commonwealth versus Cotto, which was that some misconduct by Sonia Farrick had been uncovered, but by no means the full extent. Certainly the documents reflecting the known misconduct by Farrick should have been disclosed at that time. But what the court held in Cotto in 2015 was that there was a further obligation to investigate and get to the bottom of the extent of the misconduct, which nobody is doing.
Is there a difference between the Cotto situation and the situation you're presenting in your petition in the following? In Cotto, we had guilty pleas by Farrakh on at least some of the allegations against her. And then we also knew that there was information that she was falsifying evidence in at least 8, I think, different drug testing potentials. Do we have the same kind of information here?
No,
that is I read the DOJ report. They don't identify anybody. They don't.
Right.
I'm not trying to be cute
about this, but I would say the answer to your question is no, it is much more severe here. This is not comparable to the Farrakh scandal in the sense that far more misconduct has been flagged concerning the Springfield Police Department than had concerning Sonia Farrakh when this court decided to Cotto. And it was on a record of 8 cases of misconduct.
But the Cotto cases concerned the evidence that, let's say, cocaine was cocaine, an element of the crime. Here, as I understand what you're trying to get at, is essentially impeachment evidence of potentially officers who may testify to the facts of the underlying crime. So I'm trying to figure out why you think I can, or the court can, issue the kind of order that you're suggesting that we do.
Certainly. So let me say a couple things. I didn't quite get around to answering your first question, and I don't want to make it seem like I'm avoiding that question. So when in response to the question you just asked, I want to answer both the court's authority and as to why these are the right petitioners, which I took to be part of your initial question to me. So there, in Cotto, to take that analogy forward, Mr. Cotto by no means had an interest in establishing the full scope of Sonia Farrakh's misconduct. An individual defendant, almost by definition, necessarily has an interest only in ascertaining the investigation and disclosure of the narrow slice of government misconduct that affected or didn't affect their case. What we think is more appropriate is to bring to you petitioners whose interest spans more than the narrow slice of a single defendant's case, but whose interests span getting to the bottom of the entirety of misconduct flagged by the Department of Justice, which is to say, not just the habit of falsifying reports, but the pattern or practice of hitting people on the face and other egregious misconduct. And to answer Your Honor's question with respect to how this is...
Sorry to interrupt you, but the reason you're here is because I have all these questions. So the question for me is, in Cotto, I saw how you can see how there is a problem with the administration of justice where evidence is being falsified, and then there's a conviction to that or a plea, and it implicates constitutional concerns, my branch of government, regarding the voluntariness of the plea, right? And so there's a constitutional deprivation directly related to that case and that misconduct. And here I'm wondering what that constitutional hook is in your case.
Certainly.
Given that, I don't take it to be my authority to tell the Attorney General or the Commonwealth to conduct an investigation in the absence of some constitutional hook?
Two responses. There is a hook, which I want to explain what it is. And second, I think that the court can issue a Cotto-style order, which is to say not to order an investigation, but to ask the Commonwealth to say whether it will investigate, even in the absence of a constitutional violation, which is what happened in Cotto itself. In other words, the court did not issue a holding in Cotto.
Investigate. It was tell me within a month if you're going to investigate. And the problem I have with the petition is that it sounds, you might not call these investigations, but it sounds like there are steps being taken towards investigation of the underlying DOJ report. For information, filing a lawsuit. There's some specific AG investigations of specific instances regarding, I think, Nathan's Bar. So there is an ongoing process to do that.
So I'm going to answer your question about whether there are constitutional violations here, because I think that's obviously the question you asked. But I want to get back to what Your Honor just said, because there are some things about which I think we can reasonably disagree in this case with the other side, but I do want to be very clear. There is no investigation that anyone has told us about of the full scope and gravity of Springfield Police misconduct. If there's someone who's doing it and wants to raise their hand and say they're doing it, I would love to hear that. But it's not in this record. I'm not aware of it happening. With respect to the constitutional violations, it is true that in some of these cases, it is impeachment evidence that is at issue, and it's not the falsification, which is, of course, true of the fair evidence. So for Brady purposes, there's no distinction between Giglio, that is to say impeachment evidence, and exculpatory, that is to say Brady evidence as a matter of law. But what I think what we've done with the individuals in this case is to show how as a technical matter, maybe sort of lying falsification by officers, results directly in convictions based on falsified evidence, which is a constitutional issue. Mr. Graham's case is an example of this. When police officers are falsifying records or committing excessive force in Springfield, as the Department of Justice says they are, what happens is that people get convicted of things like resisting arrest, assault and battery on a police officer, or possession of a firearm, and so forth, where the testimony of the officer is the evidence that convicts them, is what establishes the elements of the offense, just as it was when Sonia Farrick did it. So in Chris Graham's case, there's an interchange between Mr. Graham and two off-duty officers. One is a corrections officer, one is a Springfield Police Department officer.
I've read that affidavit. Why isn't that a Graham-specific case? Why do I need to step in that case?
Certainly, we included Mr. Graham as a petitioner because we believe the court could, in this case, as it did in Cotto, issue a "Are you going to investigate?" type holding in the case of a single petitioner. But I just want to be clear about the main reason, but I think an even stronger reason why the defense lawyers and defense organizations are appropriate petitioners here, is that it is not the department, it is not the district attorney's position in this matter that someone, that an individual petitioner could ask for the relief that we're seeking. Their position is no one can. Their position is that an individual defendant can ask for a particular document via discovery practice and motions practice in their criminal case. But as to our argument that there needs to be an investigation to assess the full scope and gravity of misconduct in Springfield, it is not their position that a single defendant can do that in their criminal case. It is their position that no one can do that. And it is not, and it is not their position that a single defendant can seek to ensure that, to seek to reverse the other thing that I think that I said was not happening, which is the disclosure of the underlying documents. And by the way, I understand Your Honor's point that there have been these exchanges of letters, but when a police department says we're not going to give you the records, or we're thinking about giving you the misconduct flagged by the Department of Justice, the correct answer from a district attorney is we cannot proceed with a prosecution involving your department until you give us those documents. It is not let's take a year and sort this out. I mean, it's been a year. So that's why these are really difficult circumstances, the lack of investigation and the lack of disclosure of records that have resided within the Springfield Police Department for at least a year without making their way into the district attorney's office.
So this can't be, I take your point that this is the only, perhaps, police department where this is, this kind of report has been issued by DOJ, but it can't be the only time where there's been allegations of police misconduct, rampant police misconduct and cover-up, right? So I'm wondering if you have looked or know of what the reaction has been by this court or any court related to allegations of this ilk, you know, that is police covering up for other police.
I have to say, Your Honor, we have tried to look, and I confess I don't know of another situation directly on point in terms of the scope and the non-disclosure. The fact that we're a year out from this report and no one on behalf of the Commonwealth is saying they know which officers falsified reports, and no one is saying on behalf of the Commonwealth that they know who has committed the excessive force, and no one is saying on behalf of the Commonwealth that they even have the documents, that they haven't even insisted that they get them. So I understand that now there's been a little bit of a promise since we filed our lawsuit to say that some of the that Springfield is now saying that it's going to provide some records concerning falsified reports. I'm not sure about the excessive force reports, but okay. But I don't know of another jurisdiction that has had the same turn of events. What I can say is that we have, in this court, well, the full court, in the matter of grand jury case, cited a list of things that the federal prosecutors do to avoid this circumstance.
Right, and then concluded we have no power to order the DA's office to do that. We suggest that they do, but we have no power.
Right. So, again, we've tried to be sensitive in how we've crafted our request for relief to the separation of powers concerns, which is to say we've seen, I think, very closely to how the court articulated the issue in CODO. And what I gather from CODO is that if the Commonwealth had come back and said, we're not going to investigate, then the court might not have ordered the Attorney General to conduct the investigation that it ended up conducting, but it might have instead said, well, we have a case called Commonwealth versus Batista, which concerns the recording of custodial interrogations. And we're not going to order police departments to conduct custodial interrogations. But if you don't conduct them...
Record them.
Yes, Your Honor. If you don't record them, the defense will be entitled to a jury instruction that says the court prefers that these interrogations be recorded. This one wasn't, and you're entitled to consider that when you weigh the evidence in this case. And here, too, the court could say, particularly in if there's not ever going to be an investigation to get to the bottom of this, if there's going to be no Commonwealth investigation, the defense can request, just for example, an instruction that says, the court has said in CODO and other cases that egregious government misconduct must be investigated. The Department of Justice has accused the Springfield Police Department of egregious government misconduct, and the Commonwealth is not investigating it. That is something that the jury may take into account when weighing the police testimony in this case. So there are things like that. That would be...
Not yet.
Right. The first step is
so
to understand...
So what is the authority for saying that the Commonwealth needs to conduct an investigation when the DOJ has already done so?
I do not believe it is the Commonwealth's position that the DOJ has already gotten to the bottom of the full scope and gravity, I'm trying to paraphrase Coda, of the misconduct. Indeed, it is not the Department of Justice's position. It is the Department of Justice's position that it scratched the surface.
Right. It took the evidence that it could get, compared it to the police reports, and said, well, this person was obviously beat up.
Right. And so going back to Your Honor's comparison to what we knew about Farrakh in 2015, I do think we've relied on the Department of Justice report because we think if we're not going to take the Department of Justice's word as strong enough evidence of egregious misconduct, I don't know what to go on. But we're not saying that the Department of Justice has completed an investigation into the full scope and gravity of misconduct in Springfield. It has said there's something to see here, just as there was with Farrakh, and someone on behalf of the Commonwealth, which is prosecuting people in Hamden County, needs to get to the bottom of it. And the reason, Your Honor, that it's the Commonwealth is because, unlike the Department of Justice, it's the Commonwealth that is prosecuting people based on the say-so of Springfield Police Department officers and is using their testimony to establish elements of criminal offenses.
So you're saying the DOJ report is what triggers the duty to investigate at this point? It's comparable to the allegations that were known of Farrakh at the time of Cotto.
Precisely, Your Honor. There may be a difficult case if the court determines that evidence of egregious government misconduct is the threshold for triggering the duty to investigate. There may be a difficult case down the road as to what kind of evidence of egregious misconduct does there have to be. But I don't think a Department of Justice pattern or practice investigation sorting through tens of thousands of documents is that difficult case. That's the easy case.
I don't understand that.
My point is, this is not some person walking into the Springfield Police Department and saying, I allege, I want to fill out an internal affairs unit complaint alleging egregious misconduct by the Springfield Police Department, and then I'm coming to you and saying, Your Honor, there's evidence of egregious police misconduct in Springfield because this person came in off the street and alleged it. What I'm saying is that this is much more to go on, much more concrete evidence, where not only are we saying it, but the district attorney's office, in their correspondence to the U.S. Attorney's Office and the Department of Justice, in their affidavit, particularly at pages 2 and 5 of the Hamden County Record Appendix in this matter, is saying there may be exculpatory evidence here because of what the DOJ found, and we must review it in order to fulfill our obligations. So that's the two pieces. That's enough to go on for purposes.
That's my problem, is why isn't that enough for first step, at least? Isn't this suit premature, almost, because there are these, I don't want to call them investigations, because I know you won't agree with that, but there are ongoing things trying to get at what the DA's obligations under Brady are.
Well, that is...
And it may just be the tip of the iceberg, right, and not the full extent, but
it's the tip of the iceberg in terms of disclosures. That is just not happening. And if there is an update from the DA's office, let's say today, which says, here's when we expect to begin to disclose all those records to defendants, I would concede, ameliorate somewhat a piece of the disclosure issue. It would not really negate it, because we've shown that the practices more generally are not sufficient. When Bigda, the officer who's been discussed in the papers, commits misconduct, what we should expect to see is not merely the disclosure of one video, but also the disclosure of all records in the custody of the Department of the DA's office concerning that misconduct, which has not been the practice. There's a Wilbraham police report, which initially flagged the excessive force by Victa. We don't, our client, Kelly Auer, doesn't have it. And so we...
That's why I wonder why you can't proceed individually. Obviously, you know about that report. Why can't it be sought?
Without getting into attorney-client conversations, Your Honor, I can tell you that I know about that report because I read about it in a document published in 2020, which was after my client Kelly Auer's case resolved. In other words, people who are requesting these things don't know what they don't know.
Well, that I understand, but
right.
It does seem like you could ask for the information and proceed accordingly. You know, back to my original question, why Chapter 211, Section 3?
Right.
Why not individual cases?
So two things. First, we're simply talking about disclosure at this point.
Okay.
I still am not hearing anyone on behalf of the Commonwealth saying that it is doing the investigation that is analogous to CODA. With respect to disclosure, what we are seeing is that the individual practices are inadequate. There is the problem I just identified, which is that lawyers don't know what they're not getting. They can say, what else do you have? But they don't know when they're not getting something that is in the possession, custody, or control of the DA's office. There's also the problem of the null prosequi, which is it may be appropriate in an individual, and I think there's some confusion in the record about why we're citing to those things. We are not saying that every time the DA's office files a null prosequi, it is in misconduct. What we're saying is that that, as a practical matter, makes it very difficult for defendants and their lawyers and the defense organizations who are here before you today to keep track of exculpatory evidence. If the reason a null prosequi is filed is that because somebody had a suspicion that a Springfield Police Department officer committed misconduct, then that defendant's interest in the matter ends. That defendant is not the right person to file a lawsuit or to file a motion to make sure that the misconduct is thoroughly investigated and disclosed going forward in other criminal cases. The right petitioner for that are the petitioners who are before you today, the defense lawyers and defense organizations who will be harmed and whose clients will, if the misconduct that was the reason or potential reason for the null pros is not consistently and thoroughly disclosed in all the other cases involving that officer.
What is the record of that? Like, one of the things that, you know, you talk about the record. I don't have a record. I have a record appendix, and it's disputed, and there's an alternative record appendix. What are we supposed to take as the facts? What's the next ideal step? I mean, beyond my declaration that there has to be this investigation. What's the next step here? You know, what kind of facts? Should we have an agreed-upon statement of facts? That seems like a fool's errand. Nobody's going to agree to anything other than that there was this DOJ thing. What is your proposed next avenue?
Well, Your Honor, I think that one next step would be that the case could be reserved and reported to the full court.
But not on this record.
Right.
The court will be in as bad of a position as I will be dealing with a record where it's not agreed.
I understand that. And what I would say is that would at least give both us, our side and the other side an opportunity to submit. There could be a reservation report with an opportunity to supplement with affidavits. We are by no means trying to keep the district attorney from contesting or what we have to say or putting in additional affidavits. But I do also want to say that on the core issues, the things that I led with in response to your very first question this afternoon, these are the things that are undisputed. When we filed this case, we had our beliefs, but it was not a given that the DA's response would say nothing about anyone investigating.
They say it's not them. I mean, and you seem to agree it's not you. It's some entity in the Commonwealth, presumably the AG's office.
Right. Well, it could be. But my point is, what in response to your question about what is disputed and what isn't, it is undisputed, I think, that no one is conducting the kind of investigation that arose from CODA on behalf of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. No one is doing that. It is also, I think, undisputed.
How do we know that?
Well, because we said it and the other side didn't dispute it.
Well, I mean, this other side didn't dispute it, but
right.
You've told the Commonwealth that it has, you know, the Commonwealth writ large has a duty, not just the DA's office. We don't know.
I don't think it would be appropriate for me to start speaking about everyone I've alerted to the existence of this petition, but certainly a step that the court could take if the court wanted to satisfy itself would be to provide more formal notice, which is done in some of the drug lab cases, to say the Attorney General's office or any other entity that might be in a position to say whether there is an investigation, and we can hear their answer. I think I know what the answer is, but I understand your Honor's point, which is we can hear it from the proverbial horse's mouth.
To interrupt you, but what is my authority to order the AG to do anything?
Again,
it's not like a CODA case.
Right.
I get your point that there may be some impeachment and there may be some falsified evidence in a particular defendant's case, although that one, I don't understand why that particular defendant can't bring that forward, him or herself. It's not cocaine is cocaine. This officer may have lied before.
I think the likelihood, Your Honor, here of innocent people getting convicted is far steeper.
Why?
There is certainly impeachment evidence, but there's some there's certainly impeachment evidence. That's fair, but there at least was some involvement of chemistry, maybe poorly done, the chemistry in the assertion that, say, someone's sample was cocaine. Here,
impeachment evidence for far. I mean, it was, I don't remember, I did it so often, I can't possibly tell. There was an absence of the ability to recreate whether or not it was cocaine or not. You know, this seems different in kind as opposed, you know, just, it's not an element of the crime, right?
But
you can't be distributing cocaine if it's not cocaine. Your petition, at least to the extent it's impeachment, is about whether or not this officer, you know, take Graham, for example, saw the guy with the gun,
right,
and he actually had a gun.
So let's talk about in Graham. There was no gas chromatograph that said that there was evidence run through the gas chromatograph or the mass spectrometer, and it comes back and it says, yes, Mr. Graham, he had a gun, and then there's an officer certifying that indeed I did these things, and the mass spectrometer said he had a gun. What it is all of the elements of the defense, all of them, are established by an officer's testimony. To the extent there's a comparison with Farrick, it's more favorable to our position because there isn't some separate thing beyond the credibility of the officer that is establishing the elements of these offenses. And that's just the testimony.
But taking that example, wouldn't it be better for that case to go forward and the information regarding whether or not this particular officer falsified evidence before be sought? For that particular case, because the defendant's going to know, well, it was that officer,
right,
and the defendant's going to know, I didn't do that, he's lying.
So I
want to
answer the question in a couple ways. Three ways. First of all, we know it wasn't better because Mr. Graham was convicted for something he didn't do, and he spent 18 months in prison for it. But the second bit is that, why weren't the existing procedures adequate? Well, partly there was ineffective assistance by his counsel. But partly is, if there's no investigation, I want to take it out of, I don't want to cast additional aspersions on the officer in that case. But say hypothetically, there had been an officer involved in that case who is the subject of part of the DOJ report. But no one, and he submitted maybe one false report or did one excessive force or whatever, but no one is trying to find out whether there are others. And then it's not
other officers,
other instances of misconduct by that officer, because there's no investigation that we know of by the Commonwealth. Then there won't be any disclosures, just as there weren't in the Farrick situation, because nobody is finding out just how many instances of misconduct there were. So it's not just that. So that's even before you get to the disclosure of exculpatory evidence. It's just the Commonwealth.
But what is the legal authority to say that Commonwealth has an obligation to conduct an investigation of each one of its agencies that testify in connection with a criminal case?
The authorities are Bridgman and CPCS versus Attorney General and the various drug lab cases, which say once you see instances of egregious misconduct, and again, putting aside what the evidentiary threshold is, there is a duty to find out how many there are and how bad they are. That's what the Commonwealth wasn't doing with respect to Sonia Farrick, and it is what it is not doing with respect to Springfield Police Department.
But that seems, and obviously was, doable with regard to Dugan and Farrick. It was one individual admitting guilty, pleading guilty to doing a particular thing that went to a core element of the offenses of hundreds or tens of thousands of people that were prosecuted for that. Here, it's at least 24 Narcotics Bureau officers, 5 supervisors, and a report that doesn't tell me who, when, what, occasionally mentions an incident involving 13 people.
Well,
how do we go about cabining this in any sense?
Right. Well, I will say, just by way of preface, having lived through the drug lab issues, I was told at that time that a lot of the things that we were requesting were also not doable until people did them. What I would say about this is that it just cannot be the law that if the misconduct is committed not by a single chemist but by multiple police officers, we look into it less. And that really is what is happening in Springfield right now. It's too many. It's too many people. How can we possibly find all of the falsified reports? How can we possibly find all of the evidence?
Questions for the other side.
That's right. So that's part of it. But the other thing is, going back to our back and forth about who could tell Your Honor about this investigation, one of the virtues of the CODO approach, which is tell Commonwealth tell us if someone is investigating, is that the court could also ask whoever responds to say what it is investigating. Right now, you and I are, on a little bit of a different page maybe about the whether there's investigation, but someone could clarify that. They could say there is an investigation or there isn't, and the investigation scope is as follows. And that way, if you're a defense attorney or a defendant or a defense organization, you know going into your client's case whether it is encompassed by the investigation that may or may not be happening, or whether you have to go out and strike out on your own to find the exculpatory evidence because it's not within the scope of whatever the Commonwealth is doing. And I would add, too, on the question of whether the right petitioners are before you, one of the things that happened in the DOJ when the DOJ report came out is that the DA's office sent a letter to the head of our client's organization, David Hoos, and said, here's this report. You may want to share it with people. So there's a recognition by the district attorney's office that these defense organizations play a role. They have to expend resources, their time, their energy, to find and distribute exculpatory evidence. And I think it is not going to work to...
What argument are you on now?
I'm just going back to whether this is the right matter for the court to do this.
Well, that sounds like whether or not you have the right petitioners, right? The standing issue.
Right.
Is that, I just want to put it in my legal
It is partly that, but I feel like I'm part of what's happening in our discussion is this really the right matter? And I want to say, going to connect that back to what we were talking about earlier, the Graham case, maybe I'll be corrected when I sit down and the other side stands up, but I do not think that if a criminal defendant in Hamilton County files a motion that says you need to investigate officer the egregious misconduct found by the Department of Justice and get to the bottom of it and write a CODA-style report and deliver it to me and see if it affects my case. I do not think that would be unopposed. And similarly, in the...
Well, it doesn't have to be unopposed, but the question is, can it be made in the individual case?
I think that the Commonwealth's argument would not be right. Obviously, Mr. Graham is a petitioner here, but it would be, but it's stronger in the context of a case of someone whose interest spans multiple cases, because that's the situation that we're in. I would also say with respect to disclosure that there was a 911 call in Mr. Graham's case that was exculpatory, which should have been discovered by his counsel perhaps, but also was not turned over by the defense. And so
by
the prosecution. So that case is an example of how the breakdown that we're seeing in the investigation and separately the disclosure of misconduct is a systemic problem that has not been and will not be resolved via individual motions practice in criminal cases.
What's your evidence that it's systemic? You're pointing to one case.
The systemic piece is the Department of Justice report suggesting that there's a pattern or practice.
So the systemic is the lack of investigation, not the disclosure.
The non-disclosure spans all of the records underlying the Department of Justice report, because what the district attorney has told Your Honor in its affidavit filed in this case is that it does not yet have any of the documents underlying the pattern or practice findings by the Department of Justice and has chosen to proceed with criminal prosecutions despite not having that evidence. So that is a systemic non-disclosure.
All right. I think I'm going to need to hear from the DA's office.
Thank you.
I may be back to you.
Of course.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Since Your Honor asked about the record, I'd like to talk a little bit about the record. Yesterday, petitioners served a motion to supplement the record. I would ask the court to allow that motion so that I can talk about the contents of that supplementation.
I have no objection to that. So
great.
I will allow the motion.
Let's start with the Graham case. The Graham case, and just to be clear, there is no pending prosecution. Mr. Graham was granted a new trial, not on the basis that there was any non-disclosure of evidence, but on the grounds of ineffective assistance of counsel. That supplemental filing yesterday proves that it was falsely stated in the petition that the 911 call was exculpatory. That's not true. The 911 call, the transcript is in the supplementation, does not identify the race of the person with the gun, which was the key issue. That information came to light in an internal investigations unit interview with the 911 caller, where he said, oh yeah, the fellow with the gun was white and Mr. Graham is African American. That information about the investigation was known to the defense lawyer, not to the district attorney's office, because they don't get IIU documents.
All right, so that helps with that.
Okay.
Let me just ask you a question. It does sound like the written DA's office is, that's not our job. This is so large, so many documents, we don't even know where to start.
I think that's respectfully a little bit of a mischaracterization. It is large. And I assume since Your Honor's read the DOJ report, you know that a specialized investigations division took 2.5 years, God knows how many millions of taxpayer dollars, looked at 114,000 documents. Nobody but the DOJ knows what documents those were.
Well, the Springfield Police Department. Not
they do not,
they
no.
They, didn't no. they get some from them?
No, they were given access to the Springfield Police Department's information management system. They went in and looked at whatever they looked at. And so they won't tell Springfield what they looked at. So the root of this problem is the DOJ saying, yeah, we just spent all this time, all this money. We made these findings, and the findings are probably, depending on how you count, 8, 10, 12 cases over 5 or 6 years. I'm not suggesting it's good, but it's not thousands of cases. They identify them by some initials sometimes. They don't put any dates. They don't put any officer names. And they won't tell anybody who they're talking about.
Well, that was my next question is, as I understood the filing in opposition, there are some efforts to get the DOJ to disclose that information, including the suit. What's the status of that?
I think under federal practice, they have 60 days to respond, so their answer is due this week or next week.
Okay, so it's just at the commencement.
But I assume they're going to tell us to pound sand. I mean, that's what they've been doing.
And what is the, I guess, you're more familiar with the record than I am, although I'm somewhat familiar with it. There is, as I understand it, a confidentiality agreement that DOJ was saying precluded it from disclosing the specific names. Is that, am I misreading that?
They've said a bunch of things. They've said confidentiality. They've said work product.
Yeah.
But in my mind, the defendant's constitutional right to exculpatory evidence is going to trump all of those things. I think it's...
Well, here's what. If it's the confidentiality hiccup, it seems like that could be arranged, or it seems like the only person, only entity with whom they could have had a confidentiality agreement would be the Springfield Police Department. And they could waive that so that you could get access.
I'm not aware that there's any issue with Springfield presenting the disclosure. They want the disclosure, too.
Okay.
You know, this isn't in anybody's best interest in Springfield, either the city or the DA. But the information is sitting in a file in either Boston or Washington. And the idea that somehow the district attorney's office could recreate this massive specialized investigation.
Well, I think the reply brief says, no, not you. It's going to be someone in the Commonwealth. What's your response to that?
Well, we're the party that got sued. We're the party that was the subject of a press release saying we were complicit with the Springfield corruption. So if they want the Attorney General to do it, they should sue the Attorney General. We don't have control over the Attorney General. But even so, just kind of speaking a little for the Attorney General, I know there's information in the Cotto case that the investigation costs like $20. This is, I think, a broader investigation. It wouldn't make sense to me as a taxpayer to ask the Attorney General to spend millions and millions of dollars on an investigation that's already been done by the Department of Justice. The logical thing to me, and, you know, maybe I'm looking at it overly simple, was they know who these incidents involve. Tell us.
And what is the defendant, what are the defendants supposed to do in the meantime? DOJ says we conducted an investigation. We now have reasonable cause to believe Fourth Amendment rights are violated. We're not going to tell you who. There's a suit that the DA has brought to get the identity, but as you said, they're going to say go pound sand, and meanwhile these defendants are being deprived of potentially exculpatory
information. I certainly recognize the importance of that principle, and I don't mean to denigrate it in any way. I don't think we have any evidence at all of actual deprivations. We know that at least as to a few of those incidents, disclosures have been made. The Nathan Bills case, the case involving the juveniles in Palmer, those were disclosed by the district attorney voluntarily long before the DOJ got involved. But if Your Honor, and I agree respectfully that the separation of powers prevents this court from saying to the district attorney or any other executive branch, go do an investigation. But even if you had that power, and even if you said that today, it would take at least 2.5 years. That's what it took the DOJ. I'm hoping that this federal suit will be a lot quicker than that. But I just want to go back to the
but
idea.
But they're not saying that I have the power, and I don't. And I agree, I don't have the power to order the investigation. They're saying make a declaration that the duty to investigate has been triggered given the DOJ report and the known instances of police misconduct and the actual police officers involved, that duty has been triggered. Why not issue that declaration?
Duty, I think the devil's in the details, and I know Cotto uses the word investigation, but really what the district attorney's obligation is to, I would characterize it more as an inquiry than an investigation. The duty to investigate is to locate exculpatory evidence so that it can be disclosed. It's not to develop new evidence.
But you took the Moffitt case for that, and that to me is different in kind because the individual in the Moffitt case was not the police officer who's part of the prosecution team, which I think here it would be the police officer who's part of the prosecution team. So the information is in the possession, custody, and control of that team. The individual ADA might not know about it, but certainly the police officer does.
If this court wanted to issue an order that prosecutors have to ask each police witness if they've ever beat up a defendant or lied in a police report, they could do that, but I don't think that's calculated to get to exculpatory evidence because they're either going to take the fifth or going to say, of course not. I mean, that kind of evidence is much harder to locate. And it's not just Moffitt, although I think Moffitt is important for that point. There's a paragraph in Brie that talks about that, too, that this disclosure of this kind of information could prompt, I think the phrase is, defense counsel and their investigators to pursue additional information. It's not the prosecutor's job, respectfully, to develop the entire defense case. It's to give them information in the possession, custody, control of this prosecution team that's potentially exculpatory. But they have to be able to identify that with reasonable efforts. I don't think the Constitution requires them to look through, and if you read the petition, it's not just limited to the narcotics unit. They're talking about the entire 500 officer department. Is the district attorney supposed to read every police report?
Well, they're saying no. They're saying somebody in the Commonwealth. And I get your point that you're the respondent.
I don't care who does it. That's a massive job. And it's not untethered in anything,
right? The DOJ has issued this report.
Yes.
It's not glowing, to say the least, of the SPD.
No.
And so why isn't the, you know, they're not saying every agency needs to do a government corruption soups to nuts. They're saying this particular agency that has already been identified by the DOJ needs to do, you know, there needs to be a fulsome investigation now that we know that there are these at least 24 Narcotics Bureau officers who are implicated in some way.
I guess I'm having trouble with two parts. First is the DA chooses what he investigates in the sense of fact-finding. He has a constitutional obligation to inquire about existing exculpatory evidence. But you can't get blood from a stone. He has gone to the police department and to the city solicitor and said, I need this exculpatory evidence. And the city solicitor has essentially said, I'd like to help you, but I don't know what they're talking about.
Right.
I understand the constitutional issues, but there's a practical issue here. Is to ask people to recreate a 2.5-year investigation makes no practical sense, makes no financial sense, and I think is well beyond what's constitutionally required.
Why? I understand the financial aspects. I understand you'd rather piggyback off DOJ. Why doesn't it make sense constitutionally?
Because there's no authority to require a fulsome investigation. The investigation is to identify exculpatory evidence that exists. That means going to members of the prosecution team and to other sources. And part of this is the subject of a Rule 14 revision that I understand is in the court standing committee. You know, this seems to be an effort to circumvent that in some
way. Can you explain that argument to me? I don't really understand that. Because I wouldn't
as part of the CPCS versus AG case, and then it was referred to again in grand jury, the court asked the Standing Advisory Committee to prepare proposed revisions to Rule 14 that would be a sort of, I hesitate to use the word checklist, but would make suggestions about different places that prosecutors would have to look for exculpatory evidence. So I think that's a great idea, but I don't think it entirely solves the problem because certainly after grand jury, the universe of exculpatory evidence is no longer, I've always called it within the chain of title. It used to be, here's my file, everything in it, you can look at it, you know, that's what's covered. Now, after grand jury, the court's made it clear that there's an obligation to disclose in unrelated cases. But as a practical matter, it's hard to know where that means you have to look.
From the DA's perspective.
Yeah, take the best intentioned DA in the world. And these people want to do the right thing, but they don't know what the right thing is. Nobody does, because it's hard. That doesn't mean it's not important. That doesn't mean it doesn't have to be done. But it means that working through how that's going to be accomplished is a massive task. It shouldn't be done on a 2.11.3 declaration. The committee is a good starting point because it's got lots of viewpoints. It will develop proposals. It will put them out for public comment. CPCS can make their comments. The DAs can make their comments. And we can have a full exposition of how this ought to be done.
And in the meantime, what happens to the defendants?
And in the meantime, they have not cited a single case where a defendant, where Hampden County was found to have affected a defendant's rights by not disclosing any of this supposed information. And that's why I go back to the record. The record in this case is not just undisputed or disputed. Plaintiff Hours affidavit that was filed yesterday admits to four dates that she gave the court that was wrong. Now, if you're a plaintiff in a case accusing a district attorney and all his staff of systemic, unethical behavior, shouldn't you get your facts right?
Well, one would think so, but at least they corrected
that. Well, and then they added another inaccuracy. She said in paragraph 7, oh, well, I think this is the Bigna case they're referring to in June of 2016. That wasn't known until July of 2016 because the district attorney's office found it and brought it to the defense lawyer's attention. You know, there's replete in the record instances of Hampden County making that type of disclosure.
So should we send it back to the Superior Court or a Superior Court judge to make findings of facts that then can be disputed?
On what? I think that goes to the 2.11.3 argument is I haven't seen anything here that couldn't be adjudicated in an individual commonwealth versus somebody in the Superior Court. And in fact...
And what about counsel's argument that, you know, once the individual defendant's case is resolved, they have no continuing interest in the disclosure of, let's say, officer misconduct for the next case that the officer is the key witness in?
That argument assumes an unproven fact, which is that there are systemic and ongoing violations. The district attorney's office has a vested interest in doing it right, A, because they take their constitutional obligations seriously, and B, because they don't want to end up in front of the Board of Bar Overseers. And so to say, well, if the case is dismissed and that defendant no longer has an interest, ignores the very real interest of the Hamden County District Attorneys and of the subsequent cases. It's not like nothing's going to happen. Presumably, if there's another defendant whose rights are affected, that defendant can raise it if he or she feels that appropriate disclosures haven't been made. I mean, there's a lot of smoke blowing around without any real facts.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Attorney Siegel, can I ask you to respond?
Three points, Your Honor, if I might. With respect to the investigation, counsel for the district attorney just confirmed that there is no investigation of the sort we're requesting. The way that the counsel did that was by saying, alternatively, that could be a very manageable small number of people who committed misconduct, or it could be an enormous number, the investigation of which would cost millions and millions of dollars. And the reason nobody knows which it is that there is no investigation to find out. And that enables the district attorney to say, on some parts of their opposition, it may be very small and manageable, not a big deal, not a huge scandal, or it's so big that we can't investigate.
So you admit in your reply that it may not be the DA's office that's supposed to be doing this investigation, but Attorney Mulvey is right that they're the party that you named as respondents.
Right.
I mean, should we be looking at a different suit against somebody else?
Sir, I think the answer is no. And the reason why is because there is only one entity that has taken upon itself to prosecute people in Hamden County despite this investigation not happening and despite the disclosure of the documents possessed by the Springfield Police Department underlying the DOJ report not happening. So it's certainly fine by us if in response to an order from this court or from the full court, if another entity wants to step up and do the investigation as occurred in CODO, as I understand it, the Attorney General was not counsel for the Commonwealth in CODO. It was
Commonwealth versus CODO.
Right.
Here you have a petition against the Hamden County
right.
DA's office.
And that is because the district attorney is not only counsel to the Commonwealth in the cases in which people are prosecuted based on the say-so of the Springfield Police Department, but it's also an arm of the Commonwealth. Now, I do want to say this is not an ethics complaint. Right? This is not a suit for damages or, you know, this is a 211.3 petition. So I do want to turn down the temperature a little bit in the courtroom today and to say that is, we believe, the Commonwealth's obligation and the entity that is prosecuting people in Hamden County, it is its obligation to step forward. Now, and partly in response to your question, I want to go through the disclosure piece because it was suggested just now that there is smoke but no fire, but I think what was revealed is there is, going back to your honest question about what's in the record and what is disputed and what's undisputed, I think what is now clear is there is a fundamental disagreement between the petitioners here and the district attorney about what is exculpatory evidence and what is the duty to disclose it. In the affidavit in the Commonwealth's Record Appendix from an assistant district attorney, it is said that on July 20th, 2020, the district attorney's office informed the attorney that the information contained in the SPD reports is, quote, necessary in order to meet our Brady and Rule 14 legal and ethical obligations. It is said that in the lawsuit, the district attorney takes the position that the district attorney's office must review the documents possessed by the Springfield Police Department and apparently by the Department of Justice in order to fulfill its constitutional responsibility to learn of and disclose exculpatory evidence. I'm reading from pages 2 and 5 of the district attorney's record appendix. It is also said in that same document that the district attorney doesn't have these documents. It has chosen to proceed. So when it is said that there's never been a single instance of nondisclosure, that is not true. Every time the Commonwealth prosecutes someone without having done the thing that the district attorney said is necessary in order to discharge its obligations, it is at the very best, at the very least, creating substantial questions about its disclosure obligations. I just want to take these in turn because there were some arguments made without citations to the record. In further evidence of the fundamental disagreement between the petitioner and the district attorney about what exculpatory evidence is, I want to point to the 911 call in the Graham case, which the district attorney said is not exculpatory evidence. And so when we leave this courtroom today, we have to communicate to our clients who represent people in Hamden County that if this kind of evidence exists in their cases, it won't be turned over to them. Here's the evidence. The caller says, some guys knocked, I'm going to use ellipses, on the floor, and then his buddy pulled a gun on a bunch of people, and he still has the gun right now. Anyone working on that case would know that is a reference to the off-duty officer, Pafumi, who was struck to the ground, and the person with the gun is the officer.
But now you're getting into the individual cases. I mean, I'm trying to figure out whether or not this is, you know, Chapter 211, Section 3 material. And I'm still stuck on, you know, Graham is one case. I can read the record just as well as you can. But, you know, why do I... it sounds like maybe you have the wrong defendant. It sounds like maybe... The scope of the problem is so amorphous and unknown. It sounds like the DA is doing some things to conduct inquiries.
It's been a year. I without repeating myself as to our positions, which are the investigation just isn't happening. The disclosures are not happening. I will say this. It has been more than a year. The people who are suffering in all this are our clients. They are being prosecuted without the benefit of an investigation into misconduct by the Springfield Police Department. They are being prosecuted without the disclosure.
Well, there's been an investigation. They just haven't done it in the Commonwealth.
None by the Commonwealth. Neither the Department of Justice nor any other entity has said that it has conducted an investigation to learn the full scope, to do with the Springfield Police Department officers what was done with Sonia Fair. No one is saying that has happened. And they are not getting the documents that apparently reflect.
And you're saying based on Cotto and Ware, I have the authority or the court has the authority to order that there's been a duty to conduct an investigation?
Indeed. It is incumbent on the Congress.
And that investigation would be, I don't know, 500 officers plus or minus whoever left the force over the course of 6 years.
Well, let me
and
say.
Somebody in the Commonwealth, not the DA's office, would have to conduct that.
The option.
That's what you're asking for.
No, it is not. I'm not precisely asking for that. But let me also say, it is certainly the option for the Commonwealth to say when an officer who may be the subject of the DOJ report comes to them and says, this guy pulled a gun on me, and that's why his jaw is now broken. The Commonwealth has the option of not prosecuting the person who was attacked by the officer. But if the Commonwealth wishes to proceed with the prosecution, then what it absolutely must do, according to Commonwealth against Cotto, is to perform the duty, that is to say, the duty to investigate, that's my paraphrase, in a timely fashion. The investigation must, quote, begin promptly, end quote, and be completed in, quote, an expeditious manner. Well, it's been a year, and no one in this courtroom can say which officers are guilty of excessive force in this police force and which aren't, and no one can tell me who or my clients or their clients who has falsified reports and where those reports are. And the reason is that it has turned out to be a quite effective strategy for the Springfield Police Department to tell the DA's office to basically go away and see if the DOJ will get this stuff for you. And that should not be It should not be that the consequence of a report like this by the Department of Justice is that the people who are really left in the dark are the people who are prosecuted on the say-so of the officers who are subject to the report.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, Attorney Mullen.
Just on that last
good, because that was my question, is, you know, these are the victims, is what he's saying.
No, the city has not told the DA to go away. The city has been working with the DA, and in fact, last week, I haven't seen them, but produced a batch of documents that they think may be some of the incidents in the DOJ report. The DA is looking at those to see if they match up and to follow up to see if those are in fact some of them. So it's not at all a case of the city dragging its feet. The city has
so what do the defendants do in the meantime? I mean, that's what I wanted you to respond to Counsel Siegel's final statement, which is, you know, there is the DOJ report that identifies or unknown officers who've done bad things and lied about it. And you're saying practically it's not, you know,
well,
financially not good, you can't, it's too much, it's overwhelming. Who, at the end of the day, the defendants are the ones who are suffering potentially.
Potentially. There's no evidence of that. But the most fascinating question Your Honor asked, and I was dying to hear the answer, is what are you looking for? And I still have not heard an answer to anything that would get those defendants the information that they claim exists tomorrow, next week, or next month. If they have a suggestion, I'm happy to hear it.
But yeah, I mean, I'm not going to ask them to supplement what they've already asked for. I think it's on page 32 of the corrected petition.
Yeah,
a declaration from this court that the Commonwealth's duty to investigate has been triggered.
Okay.
And ask the Commonwealth to report back whether or not it intends to do so.
We're doing it.
And then there's an interim evidentiary relief, which seems to be at odds with the grand jury case from last year.
Yes.
And, you know, I mean, you can read the rest, but that's what they're asking for.
We're trying. If they have specifics for a way that this information could be identified, like I say, next week, next month, I'd be happy to hear it. But the Springfield Police Department's been working on it for a year. They want to figure out what's going on.
And so is the best thing to do is issue a status report in a month or two to see where you're at?
Well, respectfully, I think that the obligation here is relatively discreet, and it runs to individual defendants. I don't think it's the Commonwealth's obligation to issue public status reports on its investigation. And I say that with all respect, but there are lots of reasons not to do that. There's a lot of confidential information. There's information that relates to juveniles that's special, the subject is special. You know, status reports are tricky things, and I don't see what that would really accomplish.
But you're saying that you're already doing the things
we're trying. We'd love to have this information.
So is there anything, well, can I ask you to respond to that? They're already trying to do it. What do you want me to do?
Yes, Your Honor. If it's okay with Your Honor, I'll respond briefly, but then give my colleague an opportunity just to address this very briefly.
Sure, just briefly, because we're at the end.
What I think we just heard is that since the filing of this lawsuit, there has been the first ever disclosure of documents underlying the DOJ report from the SPD, and it was just reported on in this case. So to my ears, what that means is that this litigation that we're debating whether it is the right thing and whether it is the productive thing, has already produced a better outcome than the nearly a year that preceded it for all the defendants in Hamlin County. I don't think it's adequate, still not an investigation, but it would be a shame if the single thing that's now been proven, or potentially proven, to result in the actual disclosure of documents from the Springfield Police Department to the DA's office, and then maybe in turn to defendants, if that went away. That is similar to the situation that existed in the Dukin scandal when we filed that case in January 2014 when there was no case list of Dukin defendants, none. And we said, really, you should make one. And they said, well, now we will. And that's how the Dukin case list was created. So if the result of this process, we think that that it deserves the full court's attention. We think that it deserves more than simply the turning over of documents that are already in the hands of the DA's office. The result of this process is actually getting exculpatory evidence into the hands of defendants and their lawyers in Hamden County. That would be a very valuable outcome.
What is the evidence that that's not happening?
The evidence that it's not happening is that...
Is that there is exculpatory evidence out there that
so
defendants
the
are not getting.
I will just use the district attorney's own words, paraphrased. In letters to departments and in the record appendix, the affidavit... They have a duty to review this.
Yeah.
They say that there may be exculpatory evidence possessed by the Springfield Police Department.
Right.
And before we filed, and as of May, when that affidavit is dated, the number of documents that have been turned over by the Springfield Police Department to the district attorney's office concerning that request was zero. And I'm now understanding that it's now non-zero. And that is an improvement. It's certainly not an investigation into the full scope and gravity of the misconduct, but it is not the non-zero, it's not the zero disclosure of exculpatory evidence. The reason I started getting to some of the particulars earlier is that even within that, it seems to me that there's a fundamental disagreement about what exculpatory evidence is. With respect to, say, the Nathan Bills incident, it's true that when the indictments are issued, there was a disclosure of the fact of the indictments. But the district attorney also possesses, and I have a record site over yonder, also possesses numerous reports, interview notes, and the like, which are not being disclosed. So even with it, once these documents start to make their way from the Springfield Police Department to the district attorney's office, and maybe that has now begun, there will be a separate issue about what the district attorney's office deems fit to disclose. And what we've heard today and seen in the record in this case is that there is not a shared understanding of what Brady evidence is in Hamden County. That is all I wish to say on the subject of disclosure. There is still no argument beyond there's too much to investigate for why the Commonwealth is not trying to understand for itself how bad the excessive force is in Springfield and how bad the falsification of reports is.
All right, thank you. Did you have anything else to add, Ms. Jacobson?
Thank you for your willingness to listen to me, Your Honor. I just wanted to address the where to start, which was the question, and the what to do. And it is not accurate to state that we did not provide any evidence of actual deprivations, because we did. We have provided through our affidavits cases where we have charges where one of the testifying officers, or one of the main officers, is an Ethan Bills person, or they have, or has otherwise been implicated for misconduct, and that misconduct has not made it our way. And I won't bother the court with them now because I know we're hard on time, but, you know, there's some stuff with Christian Cicero, there's stuff with Bill Billingsley, there's stuff with Pazowski. I mean, these guys are repeat offenders, and we know who the repeat offenders are, and I'm confident they do too. So where to start? I would suggest that any time a court has made a judicial determination that an officer lied in performing his duties, and that is something that should be looked into. That is, I would start right there, because first there's a case that says judicial determinations that an officer lied is highly relevant exculpatory evidence, but that's also in the possession of the Commonwealth. They get the motions to suppress, they're at the hearings, so they know who these people are, they can identify them by talking to each other, which they are required to do. They should know who
evidence in the record that is not being done, that disclosures are not happening?
Well, let's start with...
And why can't those be remedied in the individual cases?
Because it's not happening. There are no, my recollection of this record, no processes and procedures to ask everyone in the office what you know or how to, or to report this. So, for instance, in a...
But that's what grand jury says I can't do.
And I'm not asking you to do that.
Well, good.
But what I'm saying, the question was, is how do I know they're not doing it? So there was the statement, and it was in the paper, that his testimony was not credible. This is Felix Aguirre. And
in the Globe?
Oh, no. This is in MassLive. But
paper?
Here, let me go. Here, why don't I instead go to the case with Vasovsky? Okay? We have the transcript in the record. It's attached to Yvonne Vidal's affidavit. The court found that there was a substantial incongruity between his testimony and the physical evidence, and justice requires that this incongruity receive a most thorough and impartial scrutiny by the Commonwealth. So that happened in February of 2017. Another attorney in my office has a case with Vasovsky, and he has not received any notice of that. Now, not every time that a trial court finds an officer not credible does that mean there was lying or false reporting. That's not what I mean to suggest here. But this is a tremendous finding by the court that something was going on and it needs to be looked into. And so, and same with the transcript in the Graham case, where I don't have the quotes in front of me, right? But in the Graham case, the same thing. This is inconsistent. You know, we've got other transcripts. This is ludicrous, right? I mean, I would ask for them to start with the findings by when judicial officers are making determinations these witnesses are not credible and they are not telling the truth.
Why can't that be part of the individual defendant's, discovery request and Brady violation, motion for a new trial? I don't know.
The question is not why can't it be part of the individual's case. The question is why isn't it already happening?
But my job is to limit this extraordinary relief for situations that warrant it. And you're talking about individual DAs dropping the ball on their individual cases, which sounds like an individual solution as opposed to this broader petition that you're asking.
No, I'm saying that the DA is dropping the ball in all these cases, and I'm just bringing it, I can only prove it in these. I can't go to every case that Vasovsky was a...
But I can't take your word that this is happening in all the cases. You're saying there's evidence in one case. That's what I have in the record. That's what I've got to say.
Well, so I've got, for Vasovsky, it's two cases.
Okay.
I mean, you're right. I'm not going to be able to come in here. I mean, I don't know how big a showing you would need me to make for it to be systemic, right? In the Cotto case, it was eight cases, and that was enough.
Yeah, it was eight cases and her guilty plea to doing that.
Well, this would be cases, and, I mean, here's the reality, right? And there's no procedure saying that they have to. I mean, we're getting things overturned.
Sure, can you be more precise? There's no procedure saying that they have to.
The PA's office, we asked them for their procedures for this kind of, for disclosing Brady evidence. And they did not provide anything. So I'm not saying they're not following their procedures. I'm saying they don't have any procedures. We're saying that without these procedures, we're not getting what we need. And the reason we can't...
So you're saying that despite Justice Gant's statement in grand jury that we, the SJC, don't have the authority to tell the DA's office what their procedures should be, that what?
No, I'm saying that because you don't have these procedures, that there needs to be an investigation into these instances of misconduct, and that's where they would start. Because the big investigation was too big, and so they were like, where do we even start with that? What I'm saying is you start with these judicial determinations. They should have already been started with, and you may not believe that they haven't looked into it.
It doesn't matter what I believe.
I can only
do what's in the record.
But
I'm not going to make things up.
But the question was, where do we start? That was the question. Where do we start this investigation? It's so big, it's too big. And what I'm saying is,
start with the judicial finding.
Judicial termination. You're right there, and I don't think it's too much to ask. And I'm also saying that in the meantime, there's right now a presumption that this police department is reliable. And their reports come in at violation of probation hearings and 58A hearings, and my clients are held on them. When that presumption, now that there's a GOJ report, is no longer required. I think in CODO that the court offered interim, you know, the opportunity for interim remedies while an investigation is taking place.
But they're related to the drug certificate, the ability to test around the time the drugs were tested, of other samples that were available. I don't have any comparable metric.
I think a comparable metric is just to say that there's, generally speaking, there's a presumption that is no longer warranted. So that's what I'm asking for, really, is that that presumption, that we remove it. We remove it from the jury with the instruction that that Attorney Siegel asked for, that we remove it from being reliable evidence in hearings that they can use because they have indicia of reliability. They do not. And I think that without an investigation, we can't know the scope, but they don't have to do an investigation. But my clients can't be sitting around wondering, waiting, and they can't do it in their cases. They can't sit around in jail for 3 years waiting for them to figure out just how much Felix Aguirre lies on the stand and how many of his, his search warrants, of which there are many, are not accurate, right? Like,
I understand your argument. Thank you. And if nobody has anything else to say, which I hope they don't, I am going to adjourn. I'll take this under advisement.
All right. This board is now adjourned, so I'm taking a couple of moments.